From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. On today's Fresh Air, Alan Toussaint performs some of the songs he wrote that other singers made famous, songs like Working in a Coal Mine and Mother-in-Law. It's an encore presentation of Toussaint's Fresh Air studio concert. Also today, Lyle Lovett leaves his large band behind to do a solo performance of some of his early songs for us. Rock historian Ed Ward profiles the band he says recorded the first anti-parent rock and roll song, The Coasters. And critic Ken Tucker rolls up his sleeves and checks out a home video called Basic Plumbing. That's all coming up on Fresh Air. First News.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Frank Stacio. Former President Ronald Reagan suffered minor injuries today when he was thrown from a horse while vacationing in Mexico. A spokesman said the 78-year-old former president suffered minor abrasions, most of them bruises. President Bush was informed about the former president's horseback riding accident while vacationing in Maine. Scott Hood with the Maine Public Broadcasting Network reports from Kennebunkport, Maine.
President Bush learned about Reagan's accident from the Secret Service at approximately 3:30 this afternoon. Minutes later, the president was aboard his red, white, and blue speedboat Fidelity for a late afternoon boating trip. White House Press Secretary Marlon Fitzwater released a written statement saying the president was relieved to hear that his predecessor's injuries were not serious. The statement says the president plans a personal phone call to Reagan at the appropriate time. President Bush is winding up a 4.5-day vacation at his summer home in Kennebunkport. He returns to the White House tomorrow morning, where he plans to spend the day preparing for next week's 10-day trip to Europe. For National Public Radio, this is Scott Hood with the president in Kennebunkport, Maine.
Soviet President Mikhail Gorbachev began a 3-day visit to Paris today with the first round of talks with French officials. In an hour-long discussion, Gorbachev and French President Mitterrand spoke of East-West relations, Gorbachev's reforms, and conflicts in the Middle East. A group of elderly demonstrators greeted Gorbachev in Paris today with an appeal to honor French loans to the pre-revolutionary Tsarist regime. In Poland, Solidarity broke the Communist Party's monopoly on power in the National Assembly today. Opposition deputies who were elected by Polish voters in early June were sworn into office. Jane Dobia was there.
The new deputies didn't waste time before challenging their communist colleagues. They targeted economic problems, which lie at the heart of Poland's deepening crisis. For example, Deputy Jacek Kuroń called the prime minister to task for his chaotic politics. Kuroń said recent economic decisions, like raising and lowering prices, had been politically motivated and were not part of a logical economic program. The prime minister, Mieczysław Rakowski, and his entire cabinet offered to resign today. They will retain their positions on an interim basis until a new government can be formed. Some Solidarity leaders have suggested the new prime minister should come from their ranks. However, many Solidarity deputies oppose that idea and say a final decision is impossible until the communists name their candidate for president. For National Public Radio, I'm Jane Dobia in Warsaw.
A Taiwan newspaper reportedly is under arrest for a reporter is under arrest in Beijing for allegedly harboring and aiding a fugitive student leader who was at the top of the government's wanted list. Taiwan, however, has no formal relations with Beijing, and the arrest is seen as a warning to citizens of Taiwan, Hong Kong, and Macau that they will be treated as mainland Chinese. This is NPR News. According to Sudanese state radio, Sudanese military leader General Omar Hassan al-Bashir has declared a one-month unilateral ceasefire in the six-year-old civil war in the south. Bashir offered an amnesty to anyone fighting the government for political reasons. Bashir toppled Prime Minister Sadek al-Mahdi's civilian government on Friday, the day a two-month unilateral ceasefire by the rebel Sudan People's Liberation Army expired. One of the abortion cases in the Supreme Court that will review the next term is a case in Illinois in which a doctor successfully challenged the state's medical regulations for abortion clinics. The doctor was represented by American Civil Liberties Union. His attorney, Colleen Connell, explained today the pro-choice position on the Illinois abortion law.
The Supreme problem with the Illinois scheme is that it would license these facilities out of business. The Illinois licensing provisions are so stringently drafted and contain so many medically unnecessary components that prior to the lawsuit, outside of the Chicago area, there were very few outpatient abortion clinics available.
Anti-abortion state representative Penny Pullen countered that it is ironic that regulations concerning abortion clinics were challenged by pro-choice activists, since they were the ones who pushed for such regulations after a series in the Chicago Sun-Times revealed less than ideal conditions in such clinics. In Washington, the Reverend George Stallings has been suspended by Cardinal James Hickey for defying church orders and setting up an independent black Roman Catholic congregation. The Maverick priest launched the Imani of African American Temple on Sunday with a service that drew more than 4,000 people. Stallings said the new congregation was needed because the traditional Catholic Church has been too slow to respond to the needs of the American black community. I'm Frank Stacio, National Public Radio News in Washington.
Alan Toussaint seldom performs outside of New Orleans, but today we have the pleasure of presenting him at the piano live from our studios. Toussaint is one of the seminal figures in the development of the New Orleans rhythm and blues sound. In the late 50s and early 60s, at the beginning of his career, he was the chief songwriter, producer, arranger, and pianist for Minute Records, which was the most important New Orleans record company of the period. And for that label, he wrote and produced the hit songs Working in a Coal Mine and Mother-in-Law. The Pointer Sisters later had a big hit with the song Yes We Can. Robert Palmer recorded Toussaint's Sneakin' Sally Through the Alley, and Betty Wright recorded Shoo-Rah, Shoo-Rah. Toussaint has produced records by Dr. John and the Meters, and since the late 60s, he's one of New Orleans' most important recording studios. Alan Toussaint joined us for an interview last winter, and when it was over, we invited him to visit at our studios for a concert the next time he was in the area. Alan Toussaint, welcome back to Fresh Air.
Thank you.
I'm going to start with a request to play one of the first songs that was a big hit for you that you wrote, Mother-in-Law.
Oh, yes, it was one of our very first ones.
This was originally recorded by Ernie Cado.
Right.
Could you play it for us your way?
The worst person I know, mother-in-law. Mother-in-law, mother-in-law. Every time I open my mouth, she steps in and try to put me out. How could she stoop so low? Mother-in-law, 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 mother-in-law. Why Satan could have been her name? Mother-in-law, mother-in-law. To me, they're about the same. Mother-in-law, mother-in-law. If she'd leave us alone, we would have a happy home. Sent from down below. Mother-in-law, 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 mother-in-law. I come home with my pay. Mother-in-law, mother-in-law. She asked me what I've made. Mother-in-law, mother-in-law. She thinks her advice is a contribution, but if she would leave, that would be the solution. And don't come back no more. Mother-in-law, mother-in-law, mother-in-law.
So how old were you when you wrote that?
Oh, let's see. I guess 21.
Were you married?
22. Oh, no.
Right.
But mother-in-law was a national joke.
Right, that's true. It really was at the time. Things have changed.
Yes. The mother-in-laws themselves weren't natural jokes, but most comedians used to use that.
That's right. I'm going to ask you for another request now, to play the first song that you ever recorded, which you also wrote.
Great. That would have to be Happy Time. Thank you.
No lyrics to that.
No lyrics at all.
Most of your songs have been songs with lyrics. That's why I asked.
Oh, yes. Well, those I began writing for other folk, but that one I wrote for myself.
So how did you first start writing songs?
Well, I came up imitating most people that I heard on the radio. I imitated most piano players, of course, and most all kinds of music. And after I would play and become totally saturated with it, I would sit and randomly play around. So little melodies came, and that started my writing.
You know, I think two of your influences have been Fats Domino and Professor Longhair, two of the great New Orleans musicians. Do you think that I mean, I think they can be heard in your style. Would you play something of theirs and tell us how they affected you?
Oh, yes. Well, Professor Longhair, I must say, of the local people, local meaning New Orleans and the New Orleans area, has been the strongest influence on my playing and even some of my writing, the way I construct certain things. Early Professor Longhair, things like... heard that as a child, that just knocked me out. And later on, Professor Longhair began to add things to his music like... He was very, very important to me.
Was it hard to learn that when you were young?
Not hard. It was very, very exciting. Once I heard it, I could get involved. It was just the idea of it, how unique it was to me. It was off the beaten path of most other things that were all generally related in some fashion. But Professor Longhair didn't seem related to anyone else who was out there at the time.
I remember one of your... early recording sessions was filling in for Fats Domino because his piano track hadn't been laid down yet. You really could play in Fats Domino star Professor Longhair's and Ray Charles. How did you learn how to play like Fats Domino?
Well, Fats Domino was flooding the market. He had so many recordings out, and he discovered a secret to success with triplets. So as a child, I could immediately hear what that was, and most of his recordings had that in it, except for one, The Fat Man, which I thought was very exciting, but he never recorded any more like that, which was a very different kind of piano. It was kind of raunchy, like... was wonderful, but he never played like that again except maybe on one other tune. The rest of them was turned out to be mostly like the one I Want You to Know that I played on it.
Right.
Dave Bartholomew, who knew that I could play like most of the folk that were out at the time, called me in to play on a Fats Domino recording session. We were up to two tracks at that time, so we could do wonderful things. And he called me in to play like Fats would play this song, and I went in and did...
That's really great. my guest, if you're just joining us, is Alan Toussaint. And I should say, you know, whenever I've said your name, one day it would be Toussaint and one day it would be Toussaint. And so I asked you how I should really say it, and you said Toussaint. But your father's side of the family used to say Toussaint?
My father used to say Toussaint without a T on the end.
It seems very common for New Orleans families to have different pronunciations of their names.
Oh, yes. Bonnerice, Bagnaris, yes.
Right, right, right. Okay. I'm going to ask you to play another song of yours, a song that you wrote. Maybe do another one of your early hits?
Well, Lipstick Traces. The guy, Benny Spellman, that sung the bass part on Mother-in-Law, he didn't know what it was worth at the time we were doing it, but when Mother-in-Law came out and sold and went to number one, let's say, Benny Spellman, that sung the bass part, made sure that everyone within the sound of his voice got to know that he sung that part. And he would go around, he would gig based on he sung the low part on Mother-in-Law. And he encouraged me with much force to write him a song that he could use that concept. And one result of that was this song, Lipstick Traces. Your pretty brown eyes, your wavy hair, I won't go home no more, 'cause you're not there. I've got it bad, like I told you before. I'm so in love with you, don't leave me no more. Lipstick traces on a cigarette, every memory lingers with me yet. I've got it bad, like I told you before. I'm so in love with you, don't leave me no more. Won't you come back home? Oh, won't you come back home? 'Cause I'm crazy about you, can't do without you. Won't you come back home? Lipstick traces on a cigarette, every memory lingers with me yet. I've got it bad, like I told you before. I'm so in love with you, don't leave me no more. Leave me no more, don't leave me no more. Leave me no more, mother-in-law, mother-in-law, don't leave me no more. I guess you can see how that happened.
He really owed you one after you wrote that for him.
Oh, thank you.
I love it when you can do both parts as you're singing the high part and the low part.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Yes.
No, another song you wrote that was a big hit, I guess it was the early 60s, Working in a Coal Mine.
Yes.
Lee Dorsey recorded it.
Lee Dorsey, yes.
Now, I remember when I interviewed you a few months back, you explained that you had never been in a coal mine when you wrote this song.
Not only never been, I don't know anyone who's ever been in a coal mine. And I don't know why that came. Lee Dorsey was a great inspiration for me. When it was time to write for him, I would just sit back and begin to listen to the sound of his voice. And I could always hear him singing lines to songs that I hadn't written yet in my mind. And one day, while sitting on St. Philip Street in New Orleans, I heard him saying, "Working in the coal mine, going down, down, down." I have no idea why. And it was like three times faster when it came to my mind than we end up recording it. But he was a great inspiration. His voice sounded like a smile to me. And I wrote lots of songs for him, just loads of them.
Which way do you play, Coal Mine, fast or slow?
Oh, I play it somewhere in, a little slower than maybe he did it, yes.
Would you do it for us?
We'll give it a go. Working in the coal mine, going down, down, down. Working in the coal mine, about to slip down. Working in the coal mine, going down, down. Working in the coal mine, about to slip down. 5 o'clock in the morning, I'm already up and gone. Lord, I'm so tired. How long can this go on now? Working in the coal mine, going down, down, down. Working in the coal mine, about to slip down. Working in the coal mine, going down, down, down. Working in the coal mine, about to slip down. Of course I make a little money.
hauling coal by the ton. But when Saturday rolls around, I'm too tired for having fun, too tired for fun now. Working in the coal mine, going down, down, working in the coal mine, about to slip down. Working in the coal mine, going down, 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 working in the coal mine, about to slip down. Lord, I'm so tired. How long can this go on?
That sounds great. When you write a song, when you wrote a song for someone like Lee Dorsey, would you play it for him to teach him how it went, show him how it went?
Oh, yes, I would play it and sing it with him. And the other artists that were recording at the same time, usually they would be right in the room, and when I'd write a song like that, they would sing the background to it. So we heard the finished product just about, except for other instruments, yes.
So you mean the first time everybody would run through it would be in the recording studio?
Oh, no.
Oh, this is...
In my parents' front room, where we did all of the writing and recording. All of the artists used to gather in this front room at one time. And we'd spend the day there. Ernie Cato, Benny Spellman, Lee Dorsey, when he came along with us, Irma Thomas. And when I'd write a song for Lee Dorsey, Ernie Cato and Benny Spellman would sing background for a while, until he get it down. Then I would write one for maybe Ernie Cato, and Benny Spellman and Irma Thomas would sing background, and we just had a party all the time going on.
It sounds like it really helped you to know who you were writing for.
Oh, heavens, yes. There was no other way for me to do it at that time. I never, during those days, wrote a song that an artist recorded, unless it was written for him at the time, while he was sitting there, he or she, of course.
And now?
Now I write songs many times because they just come, and there's no one present. But during those days, I was never alone through the day, because the ladies and gentlemen, I'm having problems for this moment for some reason. But the artists would come early in the morning and wait till I wake up, and we would spend the day together, and we just had a grand time.
Well, I want to hear more of your music, but first we have to take a short break. My guest is Alan Toussaint, who is one of the leading figures in New Orleans rhythm and blues. He's a songwriter, pianist, record producer, and singer. So we'll hear more of his music after we take a short break. This is Fresh Air.
Fresh Air is produced live at WHYY in Philadelphia and distributed by National Public Radio.
Songwriter, pianist, producer, singer, Alan Toussaint is my guest. And I'm going to ask you to do another song. You know, I've been listening to a lot of Irma Thomas lately. She has a new record out, and you wrote some of her early songs, and you wrote a song she sings on her new record, as a matter of fact. I'm going to ask you to sing one of her earlier songs that you wrote for her called It's Raining. Would you do that?
It's raining so hard, looks like it's gonna rain all night, and this is the time I'd love to be holding you tight. I guess I'll have to accept the fact that you're not here. I wish this rain would hurry up and in, my dear. I've got the blues so bad I can hardly catch my breath, and the harder it rains, the worse it gets. This is the time I'd love to be holding you tight, but I guess I'll just go crazy tonight.
Is there a story behind writing the song?
Well, with Irma, again, she was sitting right there that day,
mm-hmm.
and it was raining. And Irma was a great inspiration for me. I could write for her all day long. And sometimes I did. And she was sitting there, and it was raining, and I could see the rain hitting on the window pane, and it was just perfect, yes.
What song do you want to play next? Another one of yours.
How about a song I wrote for Brother Art Neville?
And you've been working with him for years.
Yes. However, I wrote for Aaron Neville first. He was one of the guys in the mm-hmm. front room that would sing back and forth with others. And it was years later that I wrote for Art Neville also. And this song was one that I wrote for Art Neville. The touch of your lips next to mine get me excited, make me feel fine. The touch of your hand, your sweet hello, the fire inside you when you're holding me close. It bad, but it's all right as long as you're here every night. Your love so warm and tender, the thrill is so, so divine. It is all these things. Things that make you mine.
Did Art Neville record it?
Oh, yes, he did, yes.
And I think someone else was telling me earlier that a country singer recorded it also.
Oh, yes, later on. In fact, I went to BMI in Nashville and picked up my country award. It was wonderful.
Oh, no, that's great.
Yes.
Well, it has really been such a pleasure to hear you play and sing. Thank you so much for joining us, really. Thank you very, very much.
My pleasure.
My guest has been Alan Toussaint, who is a songwriter, singer, pianist, record producer. Alan Toussaint has really been one of the centers of the New Orleans music scene for many years now. Thanks again for joining us. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. Alan Toussaint, would you play us out?
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Additional support comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
From Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. We're listening to an instrumental from Lyle Lovett's latest album. Lyle Lovett's singles have made it onto the country charts, but his acerbic lyrics, big band sound, and a racerhead hairdo have made him something of an oddball in the country music world. Coming up, the words and music of Lyle Lovett. Also, rock historian Ed Ward profiles the Coasters. Their hit Yakety Yak was the first rock and roll song that rebelled against parents. And Ed says that after that, there was no turning back. And if you find what's underneath your kitchen sink scarier than your worst nightmare, Ken Tucker has the answer, a home video called Basic Plumbing. That's all coming up on Fresh Air.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Bill Redlin. A horseback riding accident landed former President Reagan in a southern Arizona hospital for a while today. Terry Ward of member station KJZZ in Phoenix has the story.
Mr. Reagan entered an Army hospital in Fort Huachuca earlier this afternoon for observation after having been thrown from his horse. Reagan's press spokesman Mark Weinberg says the former chief executive suffered no major injuries and is in good spirits. Weinberg says Mr. Reagan joked at the hospital that, quote, today he was his own private rodeo. He says Reagan underwent some precautionary tests and left the base by helicopter to resume his vacation in Mexico. The accident occurred during a hunting trip in Sonora, Mexico, just across the Arizona border, when Reagan's horse reportedly bucked wildly and stumbled. The 78-year-old former president is said to be an excellent horseman who's been riding since his early days as a sportscaster in Des Moines, Iowa. For National Public Radio, I'm Terry Ward in Phoenix.
President Bush mixed business in with pleasure and work around his main vacation home on this 4th of July. The White House said Mr. Bush raked up debris from his fireworks display and received a call from the Prime Minister of India, Rajiv Gandhi. The Prime Minister is said to have told Bush the Independence Day holiday in the United States is important to all of the world's democracies. Last night, the President hosted a fireworks display at his Kennebunkport estate for friends and family. It featured a $20,000 show that was paid for by a friend of the President who asked to remain anonymous. In one of the biggest sweeps of the 18-month Palestinian uprising, Israeli authorities have arrested 200 Palestinians on the West Bank. NPR's John Hackenberry reports from Jerusalem.
Last night and today, suspects were rounded up finishing an operation which began in the Bethlehem area over the weekend. The suspects include medical personnel and academics, as well as a prominent Palestinian writer. The suspects were not charged with criminal acts, aside from being members of groups affiliated with the PLO. To be a member of such an organization is illegal under Israeli military and civilian law. Since last month, more than 500 political activists, including prominent religious and business figures, have been arrested in the occupied territories. The arrests come a day before Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Shamir will face a serious political challenge from his own party, from hardliners opposed to his plan for Palestinian elections in the Israeli-occupied territories. This is John Hackenberry in Jerusalem.
Soviet President Mikhail Gorbachev met for about an hour today with French President François Mitterrand in Paris. The meeting was the start of a three-day visit to France. Gorbachev and his wife Reza went to the Place de la Bastille, where they shook hands with Parisians and tourists at the scene of the assault on the infamous prison July 14th of 1789. Thousands of people crowded up to barricades placed around the spacious square, many shouting Gorby, Gorby, as crowds did on his first visit to West Germany last month. This is NPR News.
This is Fresh Air. The songwriting and production team of Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller broke new ground in the 1950s with their group The Coasters. Lieber and Stoller pioneered overdubbing and tape splicing on their records, and rock and roll historian Ed Ward says they also brought a new kind of music to their generation.
In the beginning, there were nothing but rocks. Then somebody invented the wheel. And things just began to roll.
Did you ever hear a tenor sax swinging like a rusty axe, humping like a frog down in a hollow log? Baby, that is rock and roll.
As hard as it may be to believe these days, especially for parents, teenagers didn't always exist. Oh, growing children went through that period of their lives, but as far as society was concerned, they were either older children or young adults. The idea of teenagerhood didn't really come into existence as a separate phase of growing up until after the Second World War. Rock and roll was always the soundtrack to teenagerhood. The two matured together, so it's hardly surprising to note that the first people to recognize this new society weren't sociologists, but a couple of guys barely out of their teens themselves, Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller. Lieber and Stoller were songwriters, and they'd written Hound Dog while still in high school. In 1955, 2 years later, they were looking for a group that could perform some of the wackier material they'd been writing. And from the ashes of a group called the Robins, they put one together.
Down in the Mexicali, there's a crazy little place that I know, where the drinks are hotter than the chili sauce, and the boss is a cat named Joe. He wears a red bandana, plays a blues piano
in a honky tonk down in Mexico.
Unlike most vocal groups, they were from the West Coast, so they were dubbed the Coasters. And at first, they recorded mini-dramas like Down in Mexico, Smokey Joe's Cafe, and other stories of getting in trouble. That might have been the tip-off, trouble. Nobody got in as much trouble as teenagers. In 1958, Lieber and Stoller handed the Coasters a song about just that.
Take out the papers and the trash, or you don't get no spending cash. If you don't scrub that kitchen floor, you ain't gonna rock and roll no more. Yakety yak!
Don't talk back.
Just finish cleaning up your room.
Yakety Yak, with its litany of the endless chores teenagers had to do before they were allowed their meager privileges, was the first anti-parent protest song, and, as you might expect, it went to number one like a shot. It wasn't fair. It presented teenagers as poor innocents and parents as tyrants. Of course it was a hit. Lieber and Stoller plunged ahead, out of the home and into the schools.
Fee, fee, fi, fi, fo, fo, fo. I smell smoke in the auditorium.
Everybody always picking on me.
That's him on his knees. I know that's him. Yelling 7-11 down in the boy gym. Charlie Brown.
And lest we forget, in these days of crack dealing and gun toting in school, smoking and gambling, not to mention calling the English teacher Daddy-O, were horrible, unimaginable crimes in 1958. Like Chuck Berry's equally evocative portraits of teenage society, which were also riding high on the charts at this point, the Coasters' records sold better to white teens than to blacks, even though the Coasters' sound was in many ways typical of black vocal groups of the day. It was the comedy, even though it was sometimes bittersweet, that kept them from being lumped with the others. Actually, when the comedy didn't have a happy ending, as in the song Shopping for Clothes, in which a kid browses in an exclusive haberdashery only to have his credit denied, it wasn't a hit. And occasionally, Lieber and Stoller were so sure of themselves that they'd lose a gem on the flip side of a hit, like this little cha-cha that shared space with Charlie Brown.
Three cool cats, three cool cats, parked on a corner in a beat-up car, dividing up a nickel candy bar, talking all about how sharp they are, these three cool cats, three
Coasters continued to have hits right through 1961, but by then the professionals had come onto the scene and found more manipulative ways to evoke the teenage experience. Such dreaded teenage idols as Fabian and Bobby Rydell were starting to appear, and the innocent, fun-loving, slightly dangerous world Lieber and Stoller had created for the Coasters faded away. How else to explain why this song is best known as the title of one of Elvis's worst movies?
Girl, girl.
Lieber and Stoller were the first poets of the teenage myth, and the Coasters were their willing accomplices. For better or worse, we owe them a lot.
Ed Ward is co-author of Rock of Ages, The Rolling Stone History of Rock and Roll. This is Fresh Air. When Lyle Lovett performs in concert, he often introduces himself with this song.
Hello, I'm the guy who sits next to you and reads the newspaper over your shoulder. Wait, don't turn the page. I'm not finished. Life is so uncertain.
Here I am. Yes, it's me. Take my hand.
That's Here I Am from the album Lyle Lovett and His Large Band. Lovett's first album came out in 1986, a time, he says, when country music was open to a new breed of musician, singer-songwriters who loved the genre but also left to play with its conventions and were undeniably influenced by rock, blues, and jazz. Lovett grew up in Klein, Texas, and still lives in his hometown north of Houston. On a recent tour with his 10-piece band, Lovett stopped by our studio with his guitar. Before he played, I wanted to ask him about another track from his latest album, I Married Her Just Because She Looks Like You.
It's not the words. You know I'll always love you. It's not the words. I wish I could stay. It's more the way your lips look as you spoke them. How the moonlight fell upon your face. I married her just because she looks like you.
Is there a story behind the song?
Oh, just sort of. It's just one of those smart aleck kind of songs, really. You know, I really do like country music. And for me, most of my songs start with a lyrical idea, and that really suggests the music very quickly. And a song like I Married Her, just had to be a country song, I think.
Well, it's got such a nice hook. I mean, I figured that's the line you came up with first. I married her because she looked like.
Yeah,
you.
Well, yeah, it was, I actually saw somebody that reminded me a lot of somebody that. I used to know.
Should I ask you about the lyric that everybody, all your reviews have quoted?
Sure.
She's No Lady.
Oh, sure, if you want to, yeah.
Yeah, no, you want to recite the chorus?
Yeah, how about if I played it?
Sure, play it, yeah, good.
She hates my mama. She hates my daddy, too. She loves to tell me. She hates the things I do. She loves to lie. Beside me almost every night. Well, she's no lady, she's my wife. The preacher asked her, and she said, I do. The preacher asked me, and she said, yes, he does too. The preacher said, I pronounce you 99 to life. Son, she's no lady, she's your. Was she? she's no lady, she's my way.
Reviewers who love your records point out that song as an example as a sexist lyric. What do you think?
No, it's, you know, I don't hate women. I hate everybody.
Is that the pose you think of yourself as having?
No, it's just a joke. You know, that's an old joke. That's an old joke. That's an old lady, that's my wife. I mean, it's an old punchline to an old joke.
You do stand by your man on your new record. And I was wondering why you chose to do it. It's kind of nasty when sung from a man's point of view.
Well, you know that doing that song actually came out of doing a piece for Morning Edition one time. They asked me what my favorite country song was, and I'm terrible at naming favorites, and I don't know why that popped into my mind, but I also think it works from a male point of view. It's a very 1989 kind of thing. If a man wants to be stood by in this day and time, I think he's got to ask for it.
So do you feel like you're working with stereotypes in your songs instead of upholding them yourself?
Yes. Oh, definitely, yeah. I mean, using the stereotype to, you know, sort of propping it up to knock it down, really.
Are you considered the oddball in some country music circles?
I think so, but not in a negative way. The kind of support, I've gotten a lot of support from from other people that play country music and other performers and people in the business, almost as if they're saying, "Wow, we can't believe you're getting away with this stuff. Go, you know, keep going." Like, they're very encouraging about it. You know?
Can I ask you to sing a chorus of one of the songs that was on your first record?
Sure.
This is a song called "God Will."
Who keeps on trusting you when you've been cheating and spending your nights on the town? And who keeps on saying that he still wants you when you're through running around? And who keeps on loving you when you've been lying, saying things ain't what they seem? I don't. God will, but I won't. That's the difference between God and me. God does, but I don't. God will, but I won't. That's the difference between God and me.
I love the arrogance of it. it's a very, very arrogant song.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much. What kind of reaction did you get to that in country music circles? Because you manage in one song to insult the lover, religion, and to make yourself an absolute power.
Well, I guess empirically speaking, it went to 17.
That's great,
on the Billboard country chart, so somewhere about a 17's worth of reaction, I guess.
I think most of your airplay has been on country stations and public radio stations.
Well, your public radio has been very good to me. You know, before I ever got a record deal, the station you're on in College Station, Texas, KAMU, used to have me on all the time, and KUT down in Austin would have me on and playing my stuff before it was ever on records. My first nationwide exposure, really, I guess, was on country radio.
Is it hard to cross over from country?
Oh gosh, I'm not really trying to cross over. I'm just really trying to just do my songs, and I don't care where they get played, really. My producer at MCA said, "Heck, if we can't cross over, we'll cross under." So I think that's, we'll sneak up on them.
Can you do another of your songs for us?
Sure. This is a song that I wrote back in 1979. That was on my second album. And I, as a kid, I never really could decide what I wanted to do, what I wanted to be when I grew up. So I felt that way a lot when I was in school. And so it's a song about wanting to be everything, wanting to be a cowboy, a great cowboy hero, and a sea captain all at the same time.
And if I had a boat, I'd go out on the ocean. And if I had a pony, I'd ride him on my boat. And we could all together go out on the ocean and set me up on my pony, on my boat. I set me up on my pony, on my boat.
Singer-songwriter Lyle Lovett performing in our studio. One of the songs we talked about that he didn't get to play was Stand By Your Man. Let's hear the version he recorded for his latest album, Lyle Lovett and His Large Band.
Stand by your man. Give him two arms to cling to and something warm to come to when nights are cold and lonely. Stand by your man and show the world you love him. Keep giving all the love you can.
This is Fresh Air.
I'm Linda Wertheimer. On All Things Considered this 4th of July, we'll review the Supreme Court term that ended yesterday with the decision on abortion. We'll follow Mikhail Gorbachev to Paris and hear what happened when the Solidarity deputies attended their first Polish assembly. We'll also meet a man who's riding in a 4th of July parade. At 83 years old, he's Haynes Organ's old hand. We'll have paperback books to take to the beach, a bit about summer movies, and something on baseball's Pete Rose from a hometown sports columnist. There'll be all that and a lot more today on All Things Considered from National Public Radio.
One of the most common subgenres of home videos is the self-help tape. Critic and homeowner Ken Tucker just watched Basic Plumbing.
Whether we're talking about losing weight, learning how to play the harmonica, or making repairs on your home, there's a tedious, cheaply filmed video cassette for your area of interest. I wonder if there are also people like me, people who may not actually want to attempt whatever skill the self-help video is promoting, but who like to see how they might do it if they had the ambition or the energy. That's the most charitable reason I can think of, at any rate, for why I sat enthralled in front of Basic Plumbing, part of the Ortho video series. Basic Plumbing is an hour's worth of high drama, clogged drains, leaking faucets, backed up toilets. I don't know about you, but that sort of stuff scares me a lot more than a nightmare on Elm Street. When I see water leaking or not draining anywhere, my first thought is to run screaming from the room. Basic Plumbing, however, is the pure voice of reason.
With a little know-how, we can perform almost all routine plumbing tasks ourselves. We can make emergency repairs like fixing the toilet that overflows on Sunday mornings or the sink that clogs just before guests arrive. Soon, projects that we thought were hard will look much easier.
Like most self-help videos, Basic Plumbing features wooden actors reacting slowly and dully to situations that would reduce most of us to expletive-filled ranting. But the instructions given here are very clear. And when combined by the zombie-like quality of the performers, the The video radiates an unearthly calm while filling your head with information. Here, for example, are a couple of regular guys going through the basement of their weekend home, checking for nasty leaks.
Too bad the pipes froze and caused this. I thought we had rubber pads and clamps for jobs like that.
We used them last year, but you know, any piece of rubber will do.
Kitchen glove.
Sure. Great.
Put the rubber around the pipe, then attach the hose clamp and tighten. There, you got it. That'll hold it.
As in any good video of this kind, everything is made to look easy. The most average homeowner has just the right set of pliers. Everyone seems to know what a valve seat wrench is. And all these folks have something called a closet auger in the house. It's kept in the closet until the bathtub overflows, I guess. I still don't think I'm going to go out and buy one of those long pieces of wire, a snake, we call it in the trade, or restrain myself from calling a plumber the moment the shower gets stopped up. Still, if I was the slightest bit adventurous or handy, basic plumbing would be my video Bible.
Ken Tucker writes about popular culture for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, and Ed Dougherty produced the interviews on Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Thanks for listening. Our closing music today is Poltergeist, a rag by William Balcom, played by Paul Jacobs.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Additional support comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, Bad Taste with Paul Bartel. He directed the comedies Eating Raoul and Scenes from the Class Struggle in Beverly Hills. Also, D.A. Pennebaker joins us for a retrospective of his music documentaries, including Monterey Pop and Don't Look Back about Bob Dylan. I'm Terry Gross, and I hope you'll join me for the next Fresh Air.